Zimmerman, here. Councilperson Goodrich.
Here.
Very good. Okay, all present accounted for. The next is the public comment period. This, you can come forward to the podium. If anyone comes forward, I'll take the microphone over there. It's anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So we'll get into the transpo issue really quickly, but if you want to talk about anything that's not on tonight's agenda, you can come forward to that podium, and if somebody goes forward, I'll get you the microphone. And you're pointing at yourself like you'd like to go there.
I'm just going to go grab the mic.
Okay, that's safe. You know, I'm kind of old. I need that one today.
Exactly. Actually, I don't need it. Guy Grasso, Ferndale Chamber, 5683 2nd Avenue, for the record. I want to let everybody know, I think some people saw, we have 2011 Ferndale Chamber calendars on the back table. Everybody is free to take one. Due to some cost overruns, we are kind of asking for dollar suggested donation, but they are free. So, that's it.
Thank you. Does anyone else have a public comment they'd like to come forward? Something on the agenda? Okay. No? Okay, we'll move forward. Council, we have one thing to vote on. It's the claims run, the consent agenda, and I entertain a motion to move forward on the consent agenda. Okay, so Councilperson Hansen moved and Councilperson Ingram seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, all opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. Okay, that works good. We'll move on. This is a continuation of our public hearing on the transportation element of our comprehensive plan. I'll read the rules regarding public hearings. And this will go forward for the rest of the evening. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. If you intend to speak, it is necessary to sign up on a sheet that would be available at the counter located at the back of the room. If you can't get back there to sign up or haven't, wait, we'll call everybody that's on the sheet. If you still want to speak, stand up and you'll get a chance to speak. So anybody wants to talk to them, we'll get a chance. Comments should be limited to 3 minutes. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing, and when the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Proceed to the speaker's rostrum there, and we'll have a microphone there. If you are speaking as a representative or another person or organization, so state whether you are a proponent, opponent, or neither. Limit your comments to 3 minutes. After all comments are heard, if you have something to add that is not already stated, at the discretion of the mayor, you may give an additional 2 minutes. There will be no demonstration during or at the conclusion of anyone's presentation. During the public testimony period of the public hearing, the council, staff, and audience will remain silent. After your presentation, council members may wish to ask you questions. After the last person has spoken, the hearing will be closed and the council will enter a regular session. The subject of the hearing will usually appear as an agenda item on a council discussion, decision, or referral. The audience may not comment during the council deliberations unless questioned by the council for clarification. These rules are intended to promote an orderly system of holding a public hearing to give every person an opportunity to be heard and ensure that no individuals are embarrassed by exercising the right to free speech. So now we'll just turn over the whole agenda to our planning director.
Well, I have a microphone here. Can everybody hear me? No? All right.
You want this one?
No, I got this from McDonald's. All right. All right, so can everybody hear me now? All right. So, well, I will be embarrassed the whole time that I'm talking due to this contraption, at least it works. My first question, how many people have been to a public hearing before? How many people have been to one of these before? Okay. Pretty good, but I see that there are some people, especially our 18 and under crowd, that haven't been before, which is good, because this is one of the more important public hearings, public meetings that we're going to have. What we're talking today is transportation and the community's plan for transportation in the next 24 years. The transportation element, which is what we call it, is one element of our comprehensive plan. What it does is it lays out that plan for the next 24 years. How's our transportation system going to work? How are the roads going to work? How are you going to get to and from home and work? We have an existing transportation plan, which was updated back in 1993. We have updated it since then, and I'll get into it a little bit more. We've updated it in 2005, but it's still based on that 1993 model. Lots changed since 1993, and it was time, we felt, to bring it up into the 21st century. So with the help of the Transpo group, we have Patrick Lynch and Larry Totally. We also have our council and our mayor. We have Greg Young, our city administrator. Mark Peterson, our finance director. Sylvia Stiles, our deputy clerk. And Kenneth Marlega, our public works director. They, with the exception of Sylvia, are going to be on hand to answer questions as we go forward. I'd ask you that as we go through this presentation, you hold off on your questions until we get to the end. There's a lot that we've packed into the presentation, and hopefully many of your questions will be answered. Afterwards, we will have the public comment. After the public comment, we are expecting the comment period to remain open until January 18th, which is Tuesday after next. So when we're all done tonight, feel free to come over and look at some of the posters and ask questions. If you have more questions, put them in a comment card or come to the hearing on the 18th where you'll be able to state more of your comments. There's a lot to digest, and we understand that it's a complicated but important issue. Yes, sir.
If people have comments, can I put them on the city website and ask? Let someone get back with them?
Yes, if they get on the city Facebook page, that's probably the most appropriate way of doing it. They will not be considered a public comment, however, unless you email us or if you submit a letter in writing with your name and address. We need to make sure that you are who you say you are, more or less. So, getting into the presentation, we have a lot to discuss. First, we're going to talk about the background a little bit of why we're here. We're going to talk about the existing conditions, how the roadways work right now. And talk a little bit about the facts that you should know. Again, why are we here and what do we expect to do? The expectations of how we expect this element to work. The projects and costs. That's something that I think a lot of people are here for, and in a lot of ways, rightly so. This isn't going to come cheap to build our transportation network and make it work the way that we want. And it's not only going to be development that has to pay for it. It's probably going to be people in this room that have to pay for it as well. And then conclusions and next steps. So, I will move forward, and there it goes. Why are we here? A little bit of background. Cities and counties are required to comply with the Growth Management Act, or at least the City of Ferndale and Whatcom County are. The Growth Management Act was adopted in 1991 and basically says cities and counties must plan for the anticipated 20 years of growth. So our plans are based on those 20-year increments. We have a broader discussion of what the Growth Management actually says needs to be in the transportation element over there, the farthest closer to the left. As you can see, it's not just a couple of words. It's a long list of stuff, and that's why this program has taken about 2 years to complete, because there's a lot that's in it. The city last updated the transportation element in 2007, but a complete review of the element hasn't been completed since the early 1990s. A lot of technology has changed. Ferndale has changed, as many of you know, and it was time to update it. Now, while the comprehensive plan, and it's important that you understand this, while the comprehensive plan is the overarching 20-year vision for the city, within that, as a sub-element, we have the 6-year Transportation Improvement Program, or 6-year TIP. By the way, we have a glossary sheet. There's a lot of jargon that we're going to talk about. If you get that glossary sheet, that might help you on some of these things. The 6-year Transportation Improvement Program takes projects that are identified in the 20-year plan and identifies the ones that we actually expect to start working on in 6-year increments. It allows us to become a little bit more specific as far as the development costs, a little bit more specific as far as what the project's going to look like. As some of you know, what's on the existing 6-year transportation improvement program has been there, processed since 1993. That's something that we're going to be working on changing through this update, where what's on the 6-year transportation improvement program we should have a realistic expectation that we will be working on those projects and at least seeking funding and design for them. The city can update the transportation element on an annual basis, and in fact, we're proposing to update it this year, which is part of the 2010 amendment, and then update it again in 2011, recognizing that we're not going to get everything right tonight, recognizing that there are some things that we want to improve on in the next 12 months, and also keeping in mind that we're doing a plan of action, which is a master plan over on Main Street by the interchange. And the results of that study are going to then inform the 2011 update for the transportation element. It's going to be vital that we continue to update it because this is truly a living document. In order to be a good document, it has to remain in concert with what's actually happening. The final bit of background right here is that there really aren't easy solutions. It would be very nice to be able to come to you today and say, transportation system works perfectly right now, as you all know. We're able to maintain everything that we need to, and we really don't need to do a whole bunch to keep it the same way. That's not reality. I'd love to be able to tell you that, but it's not. There aren't a whole bunch of easy solutions. We're by no means in a situation where we're in crisis mode, but we aren't in a situation where we have money to burn. I don't think anybody knows who does. So, more background on the transportation element. What does it do? Well, it lists the transportation goals and policies. So, for example, one of our major policies and goals is to make sure that we can maintain our existing road network as it should be maintained. With the recession, we haven't been able to do that as well as we'd like, so that's why you see some roads that maybe need to be improved that haven't. It also has to be based on the land use element. So we can't just say, I travel on X road all the time and I hate it. We need to be sure that we relate the transportation element to our land use element, which says, where do we project growth to come? And from that, we take that growth and we see what that growth would do to the existing transportation network. Some roads are going to be able to do fine based on what they are already, but some roads are going to have trouble supporting that existing or the projected traffic. And in those cases, we need to identify projects to resolve the issue. The transportation element also looks at the existing conditions. How does the system work right now? And again, you see some roads, in fact, most of our roads that function very well. You see other roads, and I'm sure that you're all aware of which roads I'm talking about, and we'll get into that, that don't function all that well. Those are the existing conditions. Growth, as it comes in, shouldn't be expected, and actually can't be expected to come in as a white knight and resolve all of our existing problems. Growth is only supposed to pay for its impacts. It can't fix Main Street for us. That's something that we will need to do. It adopts a level of service standard. How do we want the transportation system to run? Do we want to be able to get from the interchange to Church Road on Main Street in 1 minute? If that's the case, it's probably going to cost a lot of money. If we're willing to wait an hour to get from here to there, we probably don't have to do much at all. The actual reality of what our adopted level of service is somewhere in the middle. We model the impact of growth on existing conditions, where, again, we take those existing conditions and then we plug in where we expect that growth to be through a computerized model so we can see exactly where the roads and the intersections specifically start to fail along there. And then based on that, where we see those failure points, that's where we identify the projects. If a road isn't broken, why fix it is the philosophy that we took. Another required element is we have to address the impacts on the state highway system. That's one of the requirements of the Growth Management Act. So we need to see how our growth will impact Grandview Road, how it will impact Interstate 5. And then we need to cooperate and partner with the Washington State Department of Transportation to help to resolve some of those issues. Finally, it'd be really easy to say there are no problems. The second most easy thing would be to say, well, we've identified a lot of projects, and yeah, sure, it costs $1 billion to fix, but we'll find a way to pay for it somehow. We need to have a reasonable funding strategy to pay for the projects that we want or that we need. If we cannot do it in a reasonable manner, then we need to reassess what our levels of service are. So, where are we today? Impact fees are an optional element that cities have to help to pay for the costs of growth-related impacts. The impact fees, again, cannot pay for existing deficiencies, but can pay if a development comes in and if it would turn a street that functions very well into a street that doesn't function well at all. It can require through concurrency that that street be brought up to standards by the developer. What we've also done is through our transportation impact fees, identified those projects and identified the aggregate cost of those projects, and then divided it amongst the projected growth. So that's where every single development that comes in needs to pay the traffic impact fee or perform the work that we would otherwise have expected to occur. We have existing impact fees, and what they're doing is they're based on the area-wide average or vehicle miles traveled in the city. So to give you an example, a property up at the corner of Church and Thornton is going to use many more miles of city streets to get to and from than a property that's right at the intersection of Slater and Rural Avenue. Slater and Rural Avenue is at the outskirts of the city, whereas Church and Thornton is more or less in the middle. So, Church and Thornton has an existing impact fee of almost $4,000 for a single-family residence, whereas a single-family residence at Slater and Cope only pays $342. They're using, in reality, a lot of the same streets, but the way that we calculate the traffic impact fees right now has an inequitable cost. This person is subsidizing the development down there. We're proposing to change that. We also, our fees haven't changed since 1997 either, and I can't think of anything else where the price hasn't changed since 1997. Back then, you could go to a movie for about $5, now it costs about $12 to see the same thing. Price of milk, price of gas, price of slacks and a shirt have all gone up, but our impact fees haven't. It's a deal to come to Ferndale right now, because we charge the same as we did 13 years ago. What does that mean? It means that the impacts of development are still the same. A car today still has the same impact on the roads as a car 13 years ago, but it's not paying for those impacts. We're still having to pay to improve the roads, however. So what's happening is rather than growth pays for growth, it's you that's subsidizing that development. And we just talked about the substantial difference in the fees based on the location in the city. I've also talked about the fact that the transportation element was last updated in 2007. That's based on the 1993 model. Fees haven't changed. Growth. It's easy to say, well, just close the doors. Don't allow more growth to come in. It works the way it does right now, so let's keep it the way it is. The fact is, of the matter is, we cannot make that statement. The Growth Management Act states that the city has to plan for 20 years of anticipated growth. We need to make it possible for 20 years worth of growth to come into the city of Ferndale. What does that growth mean? According to the Office of Financial Management, the city is projected to grow by 8,600 people by the year 2034. Right now we have about 11,300 people. So we're going to be pushing up against 20,000 people in about 20 years. And we need to find a way, a place to put them. That's what we do with the land use element of the comprehensive plan. And we need to find a way for that growth to get to and from where it is. We're also expecting that about 5,000 more jobs are going to be created by 2034. Another substantial increase. And again, an immediate knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, no, don't allow it. We have to plan for it whether we like it or not. Today, most roads do function quite well. If you were to travel around Ferndale, at virtually any time of the day, you're not going to be in bumper-to-bumper traffic. You're not going to have a whole bunch of traffic coming the other way at you. But there are some roads, Main Street and the interchanges in particular, that don't function as well. And that's something that I'm sure that some people would say, you don't need to pay a consultant to tell you that Main Street sometimes doesn't work well. Well, that's very true. But exactly how does Main Street not work well? And the answer to that question, there are a variety of answers. Main Street doesn't work very well between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. But it does work quite well the other 22 hours of the day, most of the time. It doesn't work very well if you're trying to make a left-hand turn onto Main Street. But if you're making a right-hand turn, quite often it works quite well. It's getting down to those brass tacks that the Transpo group has worked with us on to figure out what the perception is and see if the reality is exactly the same or if the reality is a little bit different. You're not going to be able to read this. I can't even read it either. But the intersection level of service, this is kind of talking about how our roads work right now. Level of service, again, is how the roadways work. And we have a diagram over there right in the middle. It's basically based on a grading system where a level of service A or B means it's free-flowing conditions or near free-flowing conditions. It's working where maybe you don't see anyone else on the road even. C or D, you start to have some congestion, but it's more of a relatively busy street. And that's the adopted level of service that many cities, maybe even most cities, have, the busy streets. And then you have E or F, where you're approaching congestion or even stop and start conditions. And believe it or not, some cities, including cities just to the south of us, have adopted E or F on some of their streets, basically saying, we expect this street, Bakerview, Sunset, for example, to function in gridlock for a good portion of the day, and that's okay. Partly because the costs of making it better are so substantial that it would be unreasonable to make that improvement, or the type of improvement that would be required would be so great that it would fundamentally alter the character of the surrounding area. Right now, most of our levels of service at our intersections are B. Bs, some As, but then you get along Main Street and you get along the interchanges and you do start to see some Es and Fs right now. Many of those Es and Fs are the result of the worst turning movement, which is generally the left-hand turn. It's easy to make a right-hand turn. It's more difficult to make a left-hand turn. So you have Main Street and Hovander, for instance, which is a level of service E. If you're turning right off Hovander onto Main Street, you can do it pretty easily. But how many people have tried to take a left out of Hovander onto Main Street? Has it been easy? No, it's difficult. And that's why it's an E. The interchanges at Portal, at Slater, and then at Grandview all have an E or an F right now for that same reason. Sometimes you have heavy volumes of traffic, but you also have the through traffic going by often higher speed, so it's more challenging to make that turning movement. So that's what we have right now. Overall, a fairly healthy system, but a system that in 20 years, if we have all the growth that we project, could be pretty significantly impacted. More facts that you should know. The maintenance costs are significant and they're going to expand. The fact of the matter is we do have a fairly substantial number of roads, and those roads don't get better over time. They degrade slowly over time, and the city must maintain them in order for them to still to function. And a lot of it is the stitch in time saves nine, where we could fix a pothole today for relatively cheaply, but if we don't fix it, it might turn into a complete reconstruction of the facility, as we saw with the Avanti Road just last year. Not all revenues can be used for transportation. This is another thing that is surprising to very many people. When the city gets revenues, be it from sales tax dollars or water and sewer connection fees or building permits, they don't all go into a general fund that can be used for whatever. They go into different silos, cash silos. And quite often, those different silos can't be used to pay for anything that we want them to pay for. So for instance, traffic impact fees can only go to projects on our 20-year list, and they can only go to fund the growth-related impacts. So we can't say right now that the Hovander Main Street intersection doesn't work well, so we're going to use traffic impact fees to pay for all of it. Because we've done that ourselves, or the growth in the past has done it. That's not the responsibility of a new development to fix an existing condition. That's our responsibility. The same goes for sales tax on the other side, where we have capital projects, which are basically projects that add capacity, new roads, things like that. We have not historically used sales tax to fund those capital projects, because many of those capital projects become necessary only when there's a growth-related impact. So the theory behind that is, if growth is causing an impact, why should we use the sales tax that they're generating to pay for something they should have paid for? That's one argument. Where are we? Projects will be completed as growth occurs. So as we'll discuss and as we'll show, we have a long list of projects, and they're growth-related projects. They become necessary as growth occurs. If growth doesn't occur, or if growth doesn't occur in a certain area, some of those projects aren't going to be necessary or could at least be delayed. So our projections are anticipating the full 8,600 people come in, actually a little bit more than 8,600 people come in, because we wanted to make sure that we did not underplan for projects. We wanted to make sure that we were ready for what may come. But if growth doesn't occur, we won't need to do the project, or maybe we can do a lesser project, a less expensive project. We are proposing to base level of service on the intersections of most streets. So how fast, how well can you get through these intersections? You can measure level of service in a number of different ways. Average speed, level of service, corridor travel time. For most of our streets, we do it based on the intersection. But for some of our more major streets, we're looking at an average trip time. An average speed time. And Main Street's a good example, where in order to measure level of service on Main Street, what we would do is on an annual basis, or more often if we choose, we would take measurements, how fast we can go on Main Street. What's the average mile per hour that we have on Main Street? If it drops below a certain level, then the level of service has fallen below our adopted level, and we must make improvements before we can allow new development. If, however, the level of service stays as we've projected, or as we've hoped, everything can keep running smoothly, it doesn't mean that you're going to be going 25 or hopefully never 35 miles an hour on Main Street, but it does mean that you would be going 17 miles per hour or so on Main Street. Now, why did we do that? We heard from the community that it's more troublesome to be in stop and start traffic, where you're sitting for a long period of time on Main Street, and that you would much rather creep along or go slow but continue to go rather than wait and wait and wait. This measurement is intended to capture that ideal and to be able to repeat it as time goes on. In addition to Main Street, we'll be separating Main Street into two different corridor sections. One of them will be east of the freeway, the other one will be west of the freeway, going to about 4th Avenue or so. We're then taking Vista as well, separating it to Vista within the city limits, and then Vista within the urban growth area up to Grandview. And then we'll be measuring Grandview Road as well to see how that corridor travel time works. Those are the roads where we're looking at that corridor travel time. The rest of the roads, we're going to be looking at the intersections. And we're going to have the ability to become more focused and look at the intersections on Main Street and the other roads through our CEPA process. That allows us, when a development comes in, to say, you're going to be impacting this intersection, and the way to improve it is to do this specific mitigation. So we have a number of different tools at our disposal. So, how should Ferndale's transportation system function in 2034? What we heard over and over is that we need to have an efficient way of getting people from the freeway to where they live, so that that east-west connection, we need to have a east-west connection or maybe multiple east-west connections that can serve that function. We also want to increase the efficiency of the existing roads first and build the new roads second. If you build a new road, it generally costs more than we have to maintain it. Whereas if we use the capacity of the existing roads or expand it on the capacity of an existing road by maybe adding a new lane, improving signalization, whatever, that's a more efficient use of our resources. It's going to cost less, and it's going to use the capacity that the road was initially built for. So it's trying to keep those costs down as low as we can. The new roads, really we're only proposing two new roads that would be growth-driven. And the two roads are Church Road Extension, and then it's the Thornton Road Overpass, both of which have been discussed for about 20 years. A number of other projects have been discussed for about 20 years, but we've approached a point where you can discuss things for as long as you want, but none of those roads have been built. So it's about time to start acting on it, we feel. We project that there will be commercial growth at the interchanges and that that will trigger improvements. The commercial growth is somewhat separate from the typical residential growth. And we're acknowledging that and understanding that some of the commercial growth might even be regional growth. It's not just growth that will serve Ferndale, but it might be growth that's going to serve Whatcom County, the Lower Mainland, Skagit County. To account for that, we're doing a master plan, at least one master plan, the first of which is going to be at Main Street and Axton Road, basically the area along that interchange east of the river. And we're going to be able to focus much more closely on the potential commercial growth that's going to happen there and identifying mitigations that would be necessary to meet our standards in the future. That's going to be starting in the next month or so. It's going to be ending in 2011, culminating in a planned action ordinance and a change to our comprehensive plan as well. Residential growth. We're still projecting that most people, many people are still going to be going up to the Church Thornton area and north of that into the urban growth area. That's where people have historically gone. That's where they're going to continue to go. You have views, you have existing neighborhoods, you have the schools right around there. We're also looking at more infill in this area, in the downtown area. Realizing the vision of people living downtown, maybe working downtown, going to a restaurant or other business establishment at night, working, living, and playing in the downtown core. Whether or not that's going to happen immediately or if it's going to take more time, we're still projecting that there is going to be more growth downtown. We're also looking at Portal Way as an area where there's already increased residential growth. There's also zoning for multifamily uses up in that area. In the next 20 years, there's going to be more and more residential growth in that area, and there's going to be commercial growth that's likely going to follow. So our land use model projects more traffic coming up into that area. How should Ferndale's transportation plan be implemented and maintained? So once we have the plan, what are we going to do with it? First of all, it's not just going to become shelf art. It needs to be looked at as a living document, as we say in the third point. Where we continually update it, we make sure that it keeps on reflecting the existing conditions, because it is our guiding document. What it does is it helps our public works director to identify what projects are necessary. It helps the public have some kind of anticipation as to what we're going to do, and it helps council so that they are anticipating what the public's expecting and what their staff is liable to propose to them. We're not going to fund all of this by ourselves. Even if the citizens of Ferndale contribute maybe more than they have been in the past, and even if growth occurs, many of the projects, especially because we now have four interchanges, possibly five if everything goes right, on I-5, we're going to need partnerships with the Washington State Department of Transportation. And yesterday, the Department of Transportation, after reviewing the document, sent us a letter basically saying the same thing. There's a lot of growth projected in Ferndale. There's a lot of growth that's going to impact I-5 and the frontage roads, and we need to partner with them. And we fully agree with that. So we are in lockstep with them at this point. And then again, the planned action, starting on Main Street, possibly then looking at Grandview and then down at Slater as areas where intense commercial development could go, putting us in a position so that we're ready for it, so that we are not being dictated to by large development. Instead, we're telling large development, if you come here, this is what you need to expect to happen. And this is what I just told you about. So I'm going to go through it really quick. We separated the city into 8 different districts, and we have the different bar charts. One of them showing existing development, the other one showing, one of them showing residential development, the other one showing commercial development. And each of those bars is separated between existing, what's here now, and then projected growth. Probably not going to be able to see a whole bunch here besides trends. You can see in more detail the poster second from the left over there. But the Thornton Church area continued to grow about as it has. Portal Way expanded quite significantly in both commercial and residential. The Slater Road Sunset area, rural road area, expanding very significantly, at least insofar as commercial and office space, and we're starting to see that already. The Axton Road Main Street area also expanding, mostly in commercial development, and then Main Street, the downtown area, expanding with both commercial and residential mixed-use development. And this model is what triggers the growth, where we take the existing conditions, we plug this growth into it, and then we see where we start to have those impacts. So that's where we're going next. In just a second. What this shows again is based on that model, here's how we expect all of the different roads to increase their traffic volumes over time. We have this again as on one of our posters. You see that some of them are increasing by maybe only 22% at Main Street. But that doesn't mean that Main Street is not increasing by a lot of vehicles over time. It's actually increasing by about 600 vehicles during PM peak hour every single day. It's just that it's an already busy street, so the 22% could be somewhat misleading. Whereas you see some other streets that might be growing by 111% out here on Olson Road, which is no longer a new ring growth area. There's not a lot of traffic that's already out there, so it makes it look like it's a little bit more. Based on those two equations, our projected growth and then what its impacts are going to be, what does our level of service look like if we only build the projects that we're gearing up to build right now? The projects that we're gearing up to build right now are Main Street all the way to Church, and then Church up to Heather. Over there. If we only built those projects, what does our transportation system look like? Main Street shifts from mostly B's and C's to F's, C's, E's, and F's. Slater goes from E's to F's. We start to see more E's, F's, C's, and D's on some of our other streets. So, as you would expect, if we do nothing and if growth occurs, our existing transportation system is going to start to struggle. Are we okay with that, or do we want to have it be a higher level of service? Right now, our existing adopted level of service is a level of service B, which more or less means that we accept congestion, periodic congestion. What we are proposing is an overall level of service that's somewhat higher, approximately C on most roads. So the draft plan would say we have higher expectations for our road system in the next 20 years than we have for our road system in the last 20 years. Sounds good, we're getting better, we want it to be better than it has been or than what we projected it would be, but with that comes costs. It would be much cheaper for us to say we accept a D or even an E or an F on some roads. But I have a feeling that's not what most of you folks would like to see. And I think that that's something that the council anticipated. We've separated the capital projects, again, these are the capacity increasing projects, into four categories. The intersection and operations improvements. So how we get through the intersection, that could be lights, that could be a new left-hand turn lane, it could be a roundabout sometimes. And we haven't identified the specific intersection improvements yet, because we need to wait to see what intersection improvement is needed. Rather than saying that absolutely every intersection is going to have a roundabout that's inflated the costs, we took a more conservative estimate on what the overall costs would be. Another area is the widening and reconstruction projects. A good example of that might be Labounty Road or even Lago Avenue, where we would be looking at maybe not increasing the capacity of the roads, but maybe adding sidewalks, curbs, gutters onto them, some of those other improvements. New roadways. Again, the church extension in Thornton are the only new roadways that we've projected. And then other agency improvements. Those are things where the county is proposing putting lights on Slater Road in the county. It might be something where the Washington State Department of Transportation might be improving the ramps, both of which would impact Ferndale, but isn't something that Ferndale would necessarily be responsible for, and in some cases may not even need to pay for. The project costs are based on the best available data that we have right now. Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball, so we don't know exactly what the costs are going to be in 24 years, and we don't know precisely what the improvement is going to be required in 24 years. We use the best available data, looking at what other projects have done in other jurisdictions to get an overall average. If we left this plan alone after it's adopted, and if we relied on these, we're going to have problems. But if we continue to update it, and if we recognize that the six-year transportation improvement program is going to be much more clear as far as what the actual project is going to be and when it's going to be constructed, we can step back a little bit, and rather than saying that project cost $11 million, but it should only cost $10.3 million, yeah, you might be right, but we just don't know right now. It's in the ballpark. Future projects and costs. There's quite a bit of projects. Again, the majority of those projects are going to be, I'm going to flip ahead. The majority of the projects are our intersection and operations projects. Again, we're talking about signalization, maybe a new lane here or there. They represent 50% of the total projects. So if we have about 30 projects, we have about 15 intersection projects. But they only account for about 16% of the total project costs. So these are the smaller projects that you can do here or there. Each one doesn't cost as much, but we have many more of them. Then we have the widening and reconstruction projects. Here we're talking, whereas the intersections are more a specific point, here we're talking about maybe more corridor level, where you're adding sidewalks here, or maybe adding another longer lane here. It represents about 40% of the total projects. So it's about 10 or 11 of our projects, and it accounts for about a third of the project costs. So they're a little bit more expensive. They are about their equivalent share of the expense. Then you have the new roadway projects. Again, we only have two of them, accounting for 8% of the total projects, but 42%, really almost half of the total project cost. These are expensive projects, these new roadways. And in particular, there's one, Thornton, which represents a third of the total project costs all by itself. But it has a lot of benefits, too. We also have the non-project-specific sideway and pavement rehabilitation. This is one of those maintenance costs, so it comes out of a different pool of money. It represents about 10% of the total project costs, and that's a citywide. That's a kind of every year, what do we need to maintain, where can we improve sidewalks, so on and so forth. Thornton, we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but this is really the kind of elephant in the room. Approximately $32 million. What this project would do would take Thornton, go over the railroad, go over the freeway, and then connect to Newkirk Road with the roundabout. There would also be the possibility of extending Thornton down on the west side of I-5 to connect with the existing 2nd Avenue roundabout. What would this project do? Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the benefits that it would have as far as east-west connections, looking for an alternative to Main Street. That is the clearest alternative to Main Street that we have. The 2nd Avenue Extension Project funneled much of the developments, much of the traffic from Main Street down, but it still then needs to navigate through the Washington Vista interchange. It needs to then find its way up back onto Main Street, or maybe Church or Washington or Thornton. What the Thornton project would do is allow folks to come northbound on the freeway, take a right off of the freeway, go up to north to Newkirk, and then go back over to their homes. It would be a much more direct route, but it would be difficult to pay for just through traffic impact funds. There's not a lot of new huge commercial development that's likely to go that could fund that improvement themselves or pay or construct it themselves. The folks that would benefit the most are the people that already live there. So having development pay for that growth when the people that are going to benefit already live in those homes might be somewhat inequitable, and that's, we're going to discuss that a little bit later too. But overall, when we talk about all of our 30-some different projects, if we completed all of them and if all of the growth came, what are we looking at? Well, we achieve our goals where we have no interchange, no roadway that's less than the level of service C. We have many A's still in 2034. We have a system that works as it does now and sometimes better than it does now. But it comes with that cost. We need to pay for all these projects, which cumulatively add up to something over $100 million over a 24-year period. It's easy to say $100 million, or the difference between $100 million and $99 million, because you're talking about six zeros on there. It's real money, we recognize that, and we recognize that it's going to have to come out of someone's pocket, and that someone's not going to be happy paying for it. But it is a potential reality. How do we pay for it? Traffic impact fees. Traffic impact fees are generated by development, can go to growth-related projects only. SEPA, or development contribution. SEPA is the State Environmental Protection Policy Act, which I do every day. It's just I call it SEPA, so I forget what the acronym is. What that allows the city to do is, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, is when a development comes in, and if we perceive that they're going to impact, in this case, a transportation system, have an adverse environmental impact, we can require that they actually complete a mitigation to improve it. So Joe Blow developer comes here, they make an intersection that is not, that has no stop signs, troublesome because they're going to generate more impact. We can require that they put in a stop sign. We can require that they put in a stop light, depending on what the transportation consultants may recommend. That's one way. The other way is development contribution, where if they're building on Main Street, and if we have a project identified on Main Street, if they do all or a portion of that project, they should be credited for their impact fees. Because after all, the impact fees are intended not as a revenue stream for the city that we can spend elsewhere, but the impact fees are intended to get the projects completed. So if a developer completes it, we're happy. Grants come from a variety of sources, federal government, the state. By including projects on our 20-year list, we are notifying one and all, everyone around, that we plan on working on the project. And so Janice Marlega, our Public Works Director, is going to be able to go to those other agencies and say, we are planning for this project, and to seek grants through that. That way, we're not going to have to put in as much off of the matching grants, so that we put in an equivalent sum of two-thirds or so on and so forth. Some of it does come from the city, where the city, through taxes, through real estate excise tax, through to a certain extent, some of our solid waste tax can fund some capital projects. For the most part, solid waste tax and sales tax are devoted exclusively to maintenance-related projects. Partnerships, we could partner with Whatcom County, we could partner with Levy Nation, WashDOT, other agencies, Port of Bellingham, on combining mutually beneficial projects together. And then taxes. And taxes, that really means new taxes. There are a number of options that cities have. Penny gas tax, vehicle tax, license taxes. There can be bonds or levies where the citizens actually vote to assess themselves an additional tax or an additional fee in order to pay for a desired improvement. That's something that we may at some point consider for Thornton, where the benefits are possibly greatest for the people already living there. So are the citizens of Thorndale ready to assess themselves a portion of the cost of making an improvement? Maintenance cost estimates. We project that based on existing sources, we over the next 24 years will get approximately $30 million in revenues for maintenance-related or eligible projects. We estimate that the total maintenance costs, including the reinitiation of the restoration of pavement rehab and sidewalks programs, is going to take us to about $38 million. So that means that we have a theoretical shortfall of $8 million. With one caveat, if the city determines that restoring the pavement rehab and sidewalks programs should be a priority, the city may utilize more of its solid waste tax, solid waste revenues, or some other revenues to pay for that. It's a question of priorities. Is this our first priority overall in the city, in which case we would be able to redistribute? Or is it our 10th priority, where maybe we have parks, police, other things ahead of it? That's a policy question for those seven individuals over there to answer ultimately. For capital projects, without Thornton, we have total capital revenues. That's our impact fees, that's our projected grants, that's our projected development contributions in lieu of about $40 million. But we have estimated total capital costs of $42 million. $2 million shortfall in 24 years. This is virtually balanced. We'd much rather have a $2 million surplus, but we don't. That's just not the way that the numbers fell out. Could be that we get more grants than we wanted, and we're fine. Could be that we get less grants than we wanted, then we have a bigger shortfall. Since we are not required to construct a growth-related project until growth occurs, we, through our six-year transportation improvement program and through updates to our plan, can reassess as much as annually to make sure that we're still on target. If necessary, we can change our level of service. If necessary, we can become more aggressive and see if we can get more grants. But we can go along. As I said the other day, we're not writing a check for $42 million today. We have 24 years, and this is going to change, too. Maybe it's going to cost us $20 million to do everything, which would be great, but not likely. It's more likely it's going to cost more, but we'll be able to reassess as we go along. Thornton, with a total project cost of $32 million, we project that $13 million of our impact fees, if all the growth comes in, are going to be able to be used in theory for this development. That's about 40% of the total cost. If we project $8 million in grant funding, and our consultants have informed us, because this does have some regional benefits, where it's maybe decreasing the pressure on Main Street, or at least keeping it the same way that it is now, where people in the county west of us are going to use Thornton, that there may be the opportunity for grant funding, that this might be a good grant funding project. What that gets us, $13 million plus $8 million is $21 million, which gives us $11 million that we need to find somewhere. The story here, right now we can't get there with our existing revenues or our projected revenues. What would it take? Historically, we haven't used sales tax to fund capital projects. It may be that we wake up in 5-6 years and we have some regional retail development where we have sufficient sales tax revenue to pay for our maintenance, to pay for our parks, to pay for our police, and that we actually have a surplus. In that case, again, as the 7 council members that you have over there may determine that it is appropriate to make an exception for Thornton, recognizing that it is a different type of project, and to use some of those surpluses. Or we might decide that we won't. Maybe what we'll decide to do is say, the citizens of Ferndale need to make a commitment or need to inform us that this is a project that they want. And the citizens of Ferndale may need to tell us that through a vote, through a bond or a levy, where possibly we've become very fond of matching. Possibly the citizens say that they will fund $5.5 million, and then the city might kick in another $5.5 million. These are discussions that we would need to have, and it's why we're separating Thornton out in this presentation and in the element, recognizing that we can come forward with more or less a balanced budget, but then we have Thornton. How important is Thornton to this community? Other ways to close the gaps, we could eliminate low priority projects. There are some projects where we say that right now we're at a level of service A, and projected growth will take it to a level of service D. Maybe we're going to be okay with that, where we say, well, that's true, but there's only 5 people that really use it an hour, so it's not as big a deal. We could then delay the projects. We could more aggressively pursue grants. And right now, there's not a lot of money out there, so we could be hitting the pavement every day looking for grants, but there just might not be grants to be had. We're hoping that we're in a sort of anomaly right now where the economy will improve and there will be more grant funding out there. But right now, everybody's looking for grants and there are less grants out there. We could increase development share of the costs. Right now, we're anticipating that development would pay for what percentage of the cost? About 50-30%. Right now we're anticipating that the development would pay about 35-40% of the total capital costs. We might say we want them to pay 100% of the total capital costs, which sounds great, you know, growth pays for growth and all that. But what that might do is it might mean that growth really doesn't come here. That they say the costs of building in Ferndale are so great that we're going to go down the road or up the road a little bit, or we're not going to enter into Ferndale's market. There's a point where that's going to happen. I know where it is. If you talk to development, as some developers, as soon as an impact fee goes up $1, it becomes prohibitively expensive. That's probably not reality either. It's probably somewhere in the middle there. We could consider, again, the voter-approved financing through bonds and levies. That's going to be up to you as far as whether or not you approve them. And then, again, we could decide to utilize future sales tax surplus. But if we were to go that direction, making it clear that there are some projects that are different, so that not all capital projects are eligible for those sales tax dollars. The new traffic impact fees, as we said before, at Church and Thornton they're paying almost $4,000, whereas down at Slater Road they're paying only about $400. What we're proposing is an overall average cost per trip, which is going to probably be right around $3,500, but is subject to change based on how much of a share of cost we want development to pay for. That makes it more equitable, where we can say, if you're generating a trip, it's $3,500. If you're generating a trip, it's $3,500, and you're done. It could be argued, though, that you use the road system much more than you do, and therefore it's not equitable. That's an argument that I think that we are ready to have, because it's tough to argue one way or another and prove definitively This way, at least everybody has one trip citywide. There is, though, the possibility of creating different districts. For instance, if we wanted to promote development downtown, we could, in theory, reduce the impact fees downtown, where the city or development elsewhere would be subsidizing more development downtown. That's a system that other cities have done in order to help depressed areas have reduced fees and come back up. Again, the average PM peak hour trip cost could be around $3,500. That's a standard measurement, PM peak hour. That's the most consistently busiest part of the day for most land uses. And that's why you call it the PM rush hour, as opposed to the AM rush hour, which is less consistent. Some people are dropping their kids off at school. Some people go and get coffee one day, but not another day. Statistically speaking, the PM peak hour is the most consistent measurement. Okay, conclusions. We're almost done, and then we're going to be able to go into the public comment and question and answer period. Said all the way along, there are no easy solutions, and there are going to need to be trade-offs. We love to bring the council things that are wrapped in a bow where we can say that there's going to be a bright, happy horizon and no one's going to feel any pain. We can't do that at this point today, and that's something that everybody needs to recognize. But we need to do that today. We need to be honest with ourselves that right now we are not doing as well as we could funding maintenance. Right now we have projects that we've talked about for 20 years that we haven't done, and while we're not getting hurt yet, it's like the smoker that's 25 years old that says, hey, I am still just as healthy as I've always been. But that might be true, but in 20 years they might be in much more dire shape. The transportation costs will impact new growth and the existing population. Growth is going to happen. Growth might not make everybody's lives better. You're going to see new people on the streets. You're going to see people at havens that you don't know. Growth happens. But there are benefits, too. You're going to have maybe more shopping opportunities. You're going to have a more diverse mix of people, ideally. There are trade-offs. Many of the projects don't become necessary until growth occurs. Right now, the city's functioning the way it is. While we haven't seen the dip in permits and the dip in population growth that most other cities around us have, it may be that at some point we don't see as much growth. Maybe something horrible happens and a major business leaves, and then we actually see negative growth. I don't think that's likely, though. Growth is probably going to occur. The projects must be identified early to be eligible for grant funding, impact fees, planning, and partnerships. We've deferred making a decision on some of these major projects for probably too long, because right now we're starting at square one on some of these projects, whereas if we had gone and done it in 1993, we'd already have paid off 20-year bonds just about today. The 2034 transportation network will function at a high level if these improvements are made. If everything goes according to plan, which almost never happens, but if it does and if we continue to maintain it, we are going to end up in pretty good shape. We feel that maintaining the existing system should be prioritized above new projects. Why build new roads when we can't even maintain our existing roads? And it's common sense, but it's a statement that really needs to be made and is made in the transportation element. And then it has to be updated and monitored regularly. It has to be a living document. We need to have these discussions as frequently as possible so that if a new development comes in, we change the plan to reflect that. If we see that development is coming in an area that we didn't expect, or if it's coming more than we thought, we need to change that to reflect it. Just because we're putting something down in writing now doesn't mean that we can't update it next year. But by putting it down in writing now, we're at least setting a course for ourselves, and a course that the public can look at and can understand and can react to and say, Council, you did it wrong. You forgot all about this. You missed took the projections where you should have had an average employee per square footage of significantly higher than you did. Those are valid criticisms, and they're criticisms that we can reflect, if not in this plan, in the next update. And so, the next steps. The council's not voting on it tonight. The public hearing will remain open, we expect, until the 18th. There's a lot to digest, and to expect you to make all your comments and to do all your research just based on me talking would be inappropriate. Once the council does determine, yes, this is the level of service that we want, these are the projects that we feel will get us there, we will then look at the traffic impact fee ordinance. That's where we can say, here's their share of the costs. The fees will be based on citywide cost per trip. That cost per trip will likely be higher than surrounding cities, specifically Bellingham. We need to recognize that while being competitive with other cities does make a lot of sense, the impact fees need to be paid by someone, that the costs need to be paid by someone. And if we said this is what the projects that it will take to get us where we want to go, someone's going to need to write that check. Whereas in some other cities, again, Bellingham, the projects identified are based on a somewhat lower level of service, so that there are maybe less projects or less expensive projects per person that are going through. So comparisons to Bellingham, it's appropriate to look at that to make sure that we aren't charging $20,000 in impact fees, but our impact fees are for our projects. We will also update our concurrency program. Concurrency basically says when a development comes in, it needs to ensure that the adopted level of service is not, that the level of service is not reduced below the adopted level of service, or to make sure that mitigation measures are in place or planned for that could be in place within 6 years after development occurred. And each city has the ability to tweak that slightly. Right now we have some provisions that say that concurrency measures must be in place at the time that a project is open for business. What that could possibly do is prevent projects from coming or result in a project that only does a piecemeal improvement, whereas we want the issues to be solved rather than just put a traffic light when ultimately a roundabout's going to be required. And again, as I've mentioned, the plan to action master plan is currently underway. There will be a substantial public process because we want to make sure that the public is involved on day one of that. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I believe that we are now in the public comment phase of this.
You want to announce the names?
Yes, sir. A couple things to remember before I announce the names. You generally have 3 minutes to speak. We will be happy to answer all of your questions. I will call you one by one. The first person we have is Lisa Lockwood.
I think she said she was leaving.
She's leaving? Okay. The next person we have is Sue Ramek. I don't know what that is pronounced here.
Ramekas.
Yeah. Yes, you would, and please identify yourself and your address.
I'm Sue
Ramekas,
and I live at 2493 Mountain View Road. My question was on the church road extension. I was curious if that road is going to go all the way to Slater or if it's going to end at Douglas.
That's a good question. And right now it's just proposed to go to Douglas. However, I'll let our consultants talk about that.
As the project's depicted in the plan now, it's just anticipated to go to Douglas. But in the future, beyond the planning horizon of 2034, it may continue all the way down to Slater. That's a possibility.
And so how does that benefit our transportation when it's repeated down at the Douglas Road intersection? It's the same sort of outlet.
So in other words, if...
Why would we build a church road extension just to Douglas Road when we've already got an intersection at Douglas Road that takes you along the same path?
Right. Well, apparently that that project is anticipated, and it's a keep in mind this is a low priority project in the plan. But if the development occurs in that area and with the annexation area, it provides some connectivity additional connectivity that would help the Douglas intersection, the right and left on in the Douglas intersection. And so that's primarily kind of the benefits of that project are like the added connection with the growth in there. As it is today, you know, that project wouldn't be needed, and only with future development would that project be constructed.
It seems a bit redundant until you finish the other end of the road where it connects to Slater.
Well, there'd be an added benefit for that, definitely connecting all the way down to Slater. But again, there is some benefit. Just that part's in the county, so the city wouldn't be responsible for that project. That part of it.
I've contacted the county about that project, and they're not interested in that.
Right, and
they said the burden of expense would be on the city permitting.
Well, and that's a good comment. I think that's one of the things that, you know, that's a project that, like I said, it's a low priority in the plan as it is. As Yori was pointing out, one of the ways to close the gap would be to eliminate some of those low priority projects.
And that is county property where you're considering.
As it, where it is now, yeah, but that's in the city's urban growth area.
Right.
One of the other things. One of the other things with that project in particular is when and if it's annexed and when and if development occurs, which is the responsibility of the property owners initiating it, that could be a condition of development. So where we have the development completed mitigation, if it wasn't proposed for development, it might be that it stays that low. But if you chose or you know, future owners or whomever chose to annex and then chose to subsequently develop, that would be a condition most likely of that development. Without it being on the plan, the city would be hard pressed to say, thou must do this.
Thank you.
Serge Slagle? Did you want to talk, Serge? Nope. Robert Fitzsimmons.
Thank you. Robert Fitzsimmons, 6121 North Beulah Avenue. I had a couple comments and a question. Number one, it has to do with the zoning proposal. And with all of the schools that we have on Zoring Avenue from Vista on to Church, It doesn't seem like it's a very smart move to increase the traffic flow to service the north side of Thorne going to Church Road. Number two, of course, we got schools in session 9 months, 10 months out of the year, so we have all those young people that are along the road and creates a bit of a traffic safety problem. Has to do with the alternative of using Alder Grove Road. I know it's on the north side of the development, I don't know what term you use there.
Malloy Village?
Well, where it's more developed.
Urban growth area.
Okay, there we go. And if you go north of that, then where you have Alder Grove Road, then you would be outside of that area. But it just seems from a common sense point of view that we'd be better off to develop the Alder Grove sort of access coming from the north-south, because all of that area is going to be developed in the next 20 years, most likely. And it would be a lot cheaper to acquire the land along the roadway. And it would probably be cheaper, I don't know, I'm not an engineer, but it'd probably be cheaper to go across the freeway down there than it is down at the bottom of Thornton. The question I have, has there ever been a serious evaluation of using the Olive Road as a contrast to the Thornton Road project? I'll sit down and just do a comment. Thanks.
In the answer to your question, for Alder Grove, that was not studied this go around. I don't know. I don't know if it has actually been studied in a previous one or not. And then I think Patrick's going to talk a little bit about Thornton.
Yeah, or just we talked at the board earlier on this project, and during our discussion there at the poster, one of the benefits of Thornton is its proximity to Main Street, and so there's a benefit because there's a lot of growth anticipated in the kind of the central part of Ferndale, and so Thornton's able to serve that growth better than the Alder Grove connection. It's a little farther north. In the future, there will be growth up there, and you know that should be examined, and maybe in another plan update.
So, what is the access from Thornton to Main Street? Do you have to go down Church Road to get to Main Street?
From Thornton,
or are you thinking of Vista?
Like it's the Vista Washington. It's essentially the traffic that coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's kind of looking at where the land use growth up in that kind of northwest part of the city. It's really that traffic that would ordinarily have to come down into Main Street to access I-5 will now be able to use the Thornton connection to access the businesses and services in the Portal Way corridor and I-5.
Mm-hmm. But see, coming down Vista or down Malloy isn't going to make a whole lot of difference to the folks that live up on the north end. They're going to have to do that eventually anyway. And it just seems so common sense to go ahead and develop the Thornton Road project, or at least take a serious look at it, if we're looking 20 years down the road, and really be serious about the cost factor there. Thanks.
Yeah, I just wanted to add here quickly, too, on Alder Grove. We internally have thought about Alder Grove. The issue, though, with Alder Grove is that it would literally need a new interchange onto the highway system, and the feds take a very dim view of adding on and off ramps to interstate freeways. That seems bizarre. But the purpose of the interstate freeway system is to get people from point A to point B, not for people to commute to and from work. That's not my opinion. That's the opinion of the Federal Highway Administration. So they have a very laborious and expensive and time-consuming process whenever anyone in the United States wants to put a new on and off ramp on the interstate system. There's a multi-year, in fact, we were told that if we were to start that process today and be serious about it, it would take at least 15 years for us to even get permission from the federal government to consider doing the project. That's without any funding. So someday, I don't doubt that there will be probably an interchange at Alder Grove. I mean, when we have a 50, 60, 70,000 population, it's something that will probably occur. But for the short run, for the next 20 years, we can utilize the existing interchange at Portal and have less problems with the federal government on adding volume to that intersection as opposed to a brand new one. It makes sense. It really does. Some people say that it's difficult because people don't like going north to go south. So they were thinking is that people tend to want to go in the direction they want to go in. So if someone's going to Bellingham or Seattle, they are less likely to drive up to Grandview or up to Alder Grove if it existed than it would be to spend perhaps a little bit of extra time going on Portal or going on Main Street. So I agree that it makes sense, but it's very, very, it's much more difficult for a new interchange to be placed on the highway system than it is to utilize the existing highway system. So will Portal ever happen? We're not sure because, as you saw, it will take not only commitment from our local citizens, but partnerships with the state and the federal government. But right now, it seems to be the more likely avenue to go. But Alder Grove does carry with it a lot of sense.
Could I add one more comment? Out of all fairness, we're really not talking about an interchange. The plan showed an overpass on Thornton. Well, if we're going to build an overpass over the freeway on Thornton, we'd be doing the same thing in Alder Grove. So we're not really talking about an interchange. Okay?
That's correct for the plan that sits right now. This graphic kind of illustrates what Thornton is much more central to where the big bars are in that area 5, of where the growth is in the current city. As the UGA continues to grow in the future beyond the 20-year horizon, it's more where Greg is talking about, I think, to push even the demand for another interchange to be needed to serve the whole urban growth area.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Benke?
Elizabeth Benke, Post Office Box 66, Ferndale, Lane, Australian Avenue. Good evening. I'm responding here to your very helpful list of frequently asked questions. On the last page, it says if this is a 20-year plan, why not demand the reduction in the use of automobiles? My previous experience tells me that demanding a reduction in the use of automobiles will never work because there are a great number of people who cannot imagine doing without their car. Later on in that paragraph, the word encouragement is used, and it's from the encouragement point of view that I want to make the following remarks. As a dedicated bus rider, I can tell you that at certain times of day, a lot of people get on the bus, like at the high school stop certain times. Other times, a lot of people get off the bus, like, unfortunately, at the food bank at certain times. But the concentrations where riders get on and off frequently are at where apartment dwellers live. I believe you'd be surprised how many of my fellow bus riders, like myself, do not own a car at all, and therefore might be less likely to vote to subsidize people who only have a car and don't use the bus. Is there a way to structure impact fees or concurrency agreements that would allow developers to give the bus some money? And if you're interested in exploring that, the ideal place to have a test program would be on the 55, which would go by the Portal Way corridor and is right now remarkably underserved. They cut back on the hours. There is, as some of you know, there has been some friction between the city of Bellingham and the county over bus service. And it has to do with the election where it was seen that the county didn't support keeping night service and Sunday service in Bellingham. Ferndale has never had night service and has never had Sunday service, but we voted 49% to keep the service. I would definitely encourage Ferndale to continue to work with not only WTA, but also with Lummi Transit to have as many creative solutions as possible. A small detail, if you're going to build more roundabouts, please make them big enough for the bus. The bus always has its right rear wheel go over the edge of the high school roundabout, and the same bus with the same driver does not have that problem in the Bellingham roundabout. So, in conclusion, I'd like to just mention another bigger picture issue that is not what we're here to talk about, but I don't feel we should leave it out entirely. The bigger picture of growth. Peak oil. Are we going to have enough gas for all of these cars to use all these new roads? The pollution that automobile traffic creates makes it more difficult to get organic certification for your farm. And I believe that food sustainability in Whatcom County is a very important issue. So the decisions we make about where to send our road dollars and what to build have, they ripple out, don't they? Thank you. Does anyone have any questions?
Dr. Benke, in response to a couple of your statements, the city of Bellingham, actually, in their newly updated transportation plan, currency program, allowed development to mitigate its impacts, partly by demonstrating, is this working? It is, okay. Partly by demonstrating that they could mitigate those impacts through non-automobile trips, pedestrian, location close to mass transit, etc. Our city is working in that direction as well, recognizing that this is a first step, really. We would anticipate that subsequent updates are going to reflect that more and more as we get more night service, and so it can become much more of a viable option for Ferndale residents to use buses exclusively. To your second point about incentives right now, the city of Ferndale has a program called the Eagle Program, which currently is focused on commercial development, but we're looking at expanding incentives or possibilities for residential development, giving credits, and actually not even giving credits, but only allowing development if they can meet certain thresholds or point thresholds. A couple of the different options in there are proximity to bus lines, are creating bicycle racks and corridors for that. So we are incentivizing it, and until we have more options, we're not quite there yet, but I think recognizing that in the plan states, we're not there yet, we're heading in the right direction. And Larry has some more.
And a couple other points on that. Even Whatcom County's new comprehensive program acknowledges and changed the level of service standard for developments that are close to transit and good trail systems and walkability in there. And that's something we've discussed with the city. We're going to get through this first level of new concurrency programs and things based on travel time and see how that best fits in. But certainly where there's transit available and can be shown trip reductions, then developments would have fewer trips to be measured against on their impact for both CEPA as well as concurrency, as well as the impact fee program. To your point on can a developer contribute toward bus service through an impact fee program type of thing, no. State legislature is looking at that again. It's been pushed. The Association of Washington City is looking at it and proposing that and done that. But right now the ordinance 8202 RCW basically identifies impact fees are allowed for parks, schools, public facilities, and such, and roads. Transit's not in there. We tried with Whatcom County to look about parking lots, and there, and basically the legal opinion was no, you can't go there, but it needs to be worked out through the state legislature. So it's evolving as areas change, but also in Rory's comment on Bellingham's, they also, in order to basically encourage the more transit out there, they basically said, well, we'll serve E and F on the automobile, okay, in certain locations. So there's trade-offs right there as well.
Perhaps someone could tell the public if and when the legislature is going to consider this so that we could write in and influence our elected representatives.
You can do that. There's also a listserv on the state legislature. I don't know exactly what it is, but you can go to the transportation committee or the road management committee. And give some email acknowledgments and certain items that will come on the agenda.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Bob Bell.
Bob Bell, my address is PO Box 1538. I'm the owner of the Mini Market on Main Street in Ferndale. I want to talk about the Thornton Road situation. One of the things that I've kind of noticed over the last several years, a lot of your planning is in trying to find ways of routing traffic around Main Street. And I think that when you look at the $32 million that the Thornton Road project is going to cost you, you need to add to that cost of that project the loss of revenue you're going to gain or lose by routing traffic away from your revenue source, which is Main Street. You know, a lot of your retail business and so forth are in Main Street. I've kind of noticed that, you know, there's some pressure because Main Street is a problem, and that's why Thornton is being talked about. But I believe, and you spend millions of dollars putting the roundabout and so on and so forth around to try to direct some traffic around Main Street. But I think if you were to spend the $200,000 or $300,000 you need to spend on the traffic or the stoplight problem. I'm on Main Street a lot. And during rush hour, I stand there and watch the traffic start and stop. Start and stop. You got three lights. I very rarely am ever able to hit all three lights green. So what is that doing during your drive time? That's creating the backup. And I believe, and then there's also been conversation about the possibility of maybe doing away with some left turns, maybe getting a second lane down Main Street during the rush hour, or maybe using Alder Grove, or not Alder Grove, Alder Street, as a alternative, and maybe do away, as I say, with left turn or other cross traffic during rush hour and getting that traffic moved. I think it would be amazing what could happen if you could have a 5 minute green light on all three lights during rush hour. And I understand why you don't want it all the time, because you want people running through town at 50 miles an hour. But by doing that, you will move that traffic, and by making some of these relative inexpensive improvements, you will solve a major part of that traffic problem. The second thing you do is you keep your traffic going by your revenue source, your retail businesses. There's something that you need to, in all your studies, you need to look at, and that is that towns like Blaine and Linden don't have to be as careful with that type of a thing, because they're kind of, they have an audience that can't go 10 miles to a major shopping area. And I would venture to say that 50, 60, maybe even 70% of your traffic from Ferndale is going down into Bellingham, going to work or going shopping in Bellingham. And I think it's really important that we keep the traffic and the people going through the areas that generate the revenue. Now, as you grow 30, 40, 50, 20, whatever years down the road, I can see the possibility of commercial development, retail development happening. And of course that, you know, and at some point maybe there will be an alternative. But I think you really need to add to the cost of that project a lot, what you're going to lose in revenue. If you look at what happened to towns that have done bypasses from their revenue areas, or when the freeway came through, what happened to those communities? And I think that you're really creating a revenue, a nightmare for yourself down the road if you continue down the path you're on. I think it's really important to, as rapidly as possible, try to solve the problem on Main Street instead of spend the money elsewhere. Because you have Main Street, you haven't been spending the money as far as traffic lights and so on and so forth. The second thing I want to address is the issue of the impact fees. And I've had conversations with a couple of you regarding that. And I think you have to understand that there's certain projects that bring revenue to the city. And there's certain projects that cost the city money. And retail, for example, offices generating sales tax revenue, so on and so forth. And I think you need to look at your impact fees kind of on a basis of what is the project, or what type of project are we talking about here? Because I think, and you had made the comment about impact fees, and there's a point where you will turn away projects. I think you're there. And I think there's projects, and I'm personally aware of projects that have not come to Ferndale because of the impact fees. And I think you need to, so what you need to do when you're doing your revision of impact fees, you have to say, okay, if this is a retail establishment coming in here, and it's going to cost them $100,000 in impact fees to build that project, and if they're there, and they come in, or if they don't come in, you've lost that $100,000. But if they have to come in, and their impact fees would encourage them to come in, they're going to generate $50,000 worth of revenue every year in retail tax income. I think you need to look at the impact fees on that basis, because I think there's some things you really want to have in Ferndale. And those businesses you want in Ferndale, I think you need to look at and say, okay, when we do the zoning thing, when we do the impact fee thing, we need to look at that and say, well, now what is that project going to do for us over the next 10 years? And in the form of revenue. Because I think it's missing in your analysis. You're showing us all the ways that you're going to get money. But I think the thing you're not showing is growth generates retail sales tax dollars for you. I mean, retail does. And I think that's a source. And I think some of your deficits there, you need them. And you kind of referred to it there, but you really didn't show it. And I think that it's frustrating for citizens where when we have growth, we've got to raise our taxes. Well, I don't think so. I think if you have planned growth, you're going to have growth in your revenues as well. And I think you need to find a way to work that, because I think anytime you add taxes, business tax or whatever, you're discouraging people from coming in and doing business in the community.
Thank you.
Thank you. There were really three points there, I think. First of all, the easiest one, I think, is the traffic lights downtown. That is, I think, the second project listed on there. That's a perfect example of one of those relatively low-cost improvements allowing our existing infrastructure to work well. And the corridor level of service, too, is designed to maintain that ability to go from one point A to point B.
In addition to that, the corridor level service is there so that improvements that facilitate flow along Main Street are promoted and can be funded. And so that's one of the reasons what you measure is what you get, and that's one of the reasons we're looking for corridor level service.
Your two other points, I think that the Transpo will be able to talk a little bit more about whether we can charge more for certain types of uses and whether we can charge less for others. And then I'm not sure whether or not the city administrator wanted to talk at all about the revenues being generated and using it. Because remember in the presentation where we talked about the different silos of money, the revenues generated through sales tax have not historically been used for the capital projects, but instead of maintenance projects. So we couldn't necessarily, based on past practice at least, say it's generating $50,000 a year that we can then use to fund this capital project, where what we would instead typically have done is say that's $50,000 that could be used only for really maintenance. I don't know who wants to talk first.
All right. What Yuri's referring to is really comes down to, I think, some of my personal beliefs and right or wrong, here they are. And in regards to growth, and it's been interesting because I know all of you, live here and you've seen Ferndale change, and I've spent 25 years working for various local governments all around the state. And some cities were very quickly growing, some were more slowly growing, but growth was always an issue. And over the years, I've really changed how I look at how a city grows and why a city grows. And I've had these discussions with Yuri, and I've had them with some of the council as well. I'm interested in building community. I'm not interested in having Ferndale get bigger. Because if Ferndale just gets bigger, how are your lives any better? You moved to Ferndale because it's a small town. If you wanted to live in a big city, you'd live somewhere else. So bigger, in my mind, is not necessarily better, and for people who already live in Ferndale, bigger is probably worse. While you may want to shop locally, do you really want to have clogged streets to do it? How is that going to help your standard of living? As people move to Ferndale, and this goes back to this growth pays for growth, my opinion is that we shouldn't be asked to use our property tax and our sales tax to fund capital improvement projects that are growth related. And the reason being is that if we are asked to use those extra revenue sources, we don't have them available for parks, we don't have them available for police, we don't have them available for fire, we don't have them available for all of those truly important services that you need. What makes a city great is its park systems. We don't operate schools, but schools make a city great. I've never heard anyone say, I love living in this big city because they have the best freeways in the world. That's almost an oxymoron. From the standpoint of growing the city, I believe that using sales tax and property tax, the way the city council wants to use the money, is more appropriate than saying, when growth comes, we're going to take the extra money that they generate and fix the problems that growth causes. And it's a philosophical difference, I think, between the idea of bigger is better versus how is it going to affect the people who are currently living here today. So, at the risk of driving business away, my opinion is that we should try to get as much money as possible from these developers that come into town. If they don't come into town, we don't have the impact.
We don't get the revenue, but we don't have the impacts. In my mind, I think that's a fair trade. Now, should we shut the doors and not have any development come to Ferndale? No, that's unrealistic. But I think if we set the bar high enough, but not too much, but set it high enough, certain businesses will make a logical business decision that the cost of doing business in Ferndale is worth it. Others might not, but others will. So I guess I have a personal philosophical issue with the idea of lowering costs for the purpose of driving growth, because I see that as a zero-sum game, and perhaps even less than that. That you end up with all the growth, you end up with all the impacts, and you've now embedded in that an obligation to use your new revenues to solve the problems you didn't have until the growth came. So, enough of me on my high horse here. That's just an approach that I guess am suggesting for the council. It's not something that perhaps you will hear from some developers and others who they have to pull the wallet out of their back pocket. And I appreciate that it's a little different when the person who's paying the bills is the person who's actually writing the checks. But when it comes to the idea of saying that new revenue will pay for growth-related projects, that may work out, but I'm not sure if that's the best marginal use of those extra incomes, because again, I want to try to make your lives better, and I think the way we make it better is to make Ferndale a great place to live. And you make Ferndale a great place to live by having good sidewalks, decent roadways, good schools, good parks, good open space, and in my mind, that is the reason why people live in cities. So anyway, with that said, that's my personal editorial comment for the evening.
So he's taking all the fun out of the transportation area. But some of the improvements are also to help businesses and such, the sidewalk projects, the connectivity, so people can go shop, park in one spot, or ride the bus in and get around downtown and get to between the parks and down to businesses, to the coffee shop, and things out here. And this plan reflects those kind of activities in here. We weren't just focusing on how to move cars through the process. But yes, you can look at impact fees and adjust them in a couple of different ways. One, the programs that we introduced to the city would certainly take into account the type of development and how much of that traffic is new. If it's espresso stand along the main street and people are driving by anyway, they're not generating a lot of new trips. They're intercepting traffic that's already there. So their fees are going to be reduced based on what portion of that traffic is new and growth related. And their studies kind of give that percentage versus a regional retail coming in and saying, hey, we're bringing a lot of traffic from whether it's Blaine or Canada or down from Mount Vernon and stuff or wherever it may be coming from into Ferndale because it's conveniently located or whatever type of stuff out here. The other way of doing it is looking at districts. And Yuri kind of referred to, and maybe downtown's a separate district and the interchange area versus the Slater Road area or other types. And we'll be looking at that further on. And that may also help adjust where those different fees are applied and the different types of businesses to be supported by. So in downtown, it may be the more specialty retail or the real estate office or other types of things, which are really locally serving type things versus something that's bringing in traffic from the region. So we will be looking at those kind of activities through the next steps in here. But before we get there, we have to understand what the plan really needs to have. Level service standards, which projects, and you brought up Thornton as a way to get around. And our opinion on that is that if you don't build it, it's going to be very difficult to maintain the flow on Main Street. And you'll have people avoiding Main Street just because it's so congested. And we're not going to do any of those businesses. And we've seen that in many communities out there. But it's not something that's going to happen right away. It's going to take time. It's going to be based on this development that occurs. And with as much development has been identified in here, there's going to need to be another way to get across I-5 in those areas. Because Main Street by itself, the bridge, It's already approaching capacity, and we add another 22% traffic on it, it's going to even be worse. So there's technical reasons for it, but it is a philosophical discussion that needs to be considered in the whole plan.
Are you familiar with the plan that happened 25, 30 years ago of the second bridge?
We reviewed second bridge and one-way couplet type items in here. And the issue with that was, what do you bring back together out there, and how's that traffic circulating? And we also, in doing work in other communities, the putting in, especially if it turns into a one-way couplet, retail businesses really don't like that.
Okay, Gary Bannerman?
I think I'll pass my questions right after doing your presentation.
Thank you. Jim Pettinger? Sir?
Yeah, I'm Jim Pettinger. I live at 2245 Lancaster Way, and I also own a business at 1465 Slater Road, which I think may be in the city. I'm not sure.
By 3 days.
3 days, it will be in the city.
Yep, it has been for 3 days.
I could take a few seconds of my 3 minutes. In the past couple of years, I really have appreciated all the hard work on behalf of the mayor and the council and the city staff, and what's been extremely difficult times keeping this city up and running and moving smoothly, and it still continues to be a great place to live and work and play and raise kids. So thank you all very much for that. And I'd like to speak to the, so if you could put Thornton back up again. I'm in favor of that. 3 or 4 years ago, the city, the transportation plan included 3 possibilities for Thornton. And I spoke to council at that time and urged that if we really wanted to get something done, I would prefer to have a single possibility. So at that time, I thought it morphed down to a single possibility. I think the drawing was done by Eric Wheaton that showed an overpass that swung down and came along the west side. And so we were at a single possibility. So I was kind of surprised to see this back again, where we now are back to an overpass, and maybe we're going to do this or maybe we're going to do that. So one thing I'd like to urge is that you move towards having something that's really specific. I think if you want to encourage developers to go on, you can't say, well, maybe we'll have this or maybe we'll have that. I think we really need something specific for that. And I think it's a great idea. And, you know, I must say that one of the benefits of that, which I see, is an alternative way to get me from Vista Ridge downtown. Vista can get plugged sometimes. We're talking about some more construction on a traffic circle at Washington and Vista. So I see that as another alternative to get downtown, not just simply to commute out of town, but also as a good alternative. And the psychology of having to go all the way across and then all the way back downtown doesn't work for me somehow. Maybe it's because my business used to be down by Bakerview, where they have that crazy, crazy northbound on-ramp. And I don't drive across and go back north. I cut up, what's the name of the road there? Northwest. So I don't like the psychology of commuting downtown by going across the freeway and then coming back in the freeway. So I think that's a benefit that should be included. And I'm sure Mr. Bell would enjoy that too, is having an alternative way for people to get downtown when there's congestion, which there will be more and more on Vista. And that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Yeah, as far as the Thornton project, the technical analysis basically supporting more of going all the way across, because it connects, it provides another connection across I-5 as opposed to taking all that traffic and still, if you bring it down on the west side only, traffic northbound off the portal now goes, it has to go back underneath the freeway to get to the roundabout to go north on that, and so we're basically creating another bottleneck hourglass, if you will. Right at portal, and eventually we'll be at congested levels there, similar to what you're getting now or in the future at Main Street. And so, and furthermore, having one more connection across provides local connectivity kind of separates the local access from the community and the portal way businesses that you're in.
I like the idea of doing both. I mean, that's the ideal, and I like the idea of doing both.
And the idea of coming in, the second one coming in both, is there, we need to, it needs to go through the next level of preliminary design to see how that really fits in with the existing roundabout and how much that might have to be expanded to accommodate that.
So I just like to see us say, okay, we're going to do both, and that's the plan. If you want, Mr. Developer, this is what we're going to do. Plan's gone.
Yeah, what we're looking at right now is trying to get, if the city could choose to move forward with this, one of the priorities would be just to get at least the preliminary engineering and environmental review funded. So then that can be kind of footprinted and say, this is what the plan really says out there. That would be kind of a step to make it, to take this beyond this conceptual thing to a more real project.
Yeah, I think it's
and
a great
more
idea.
Real cost.
So I'd really like to see it become very specific as opposed to possibility.
Right. Ken Latrell?
I'm a state.
Okay. And Mark Walker?
Mark Walker, 2227 Old Lakeway Drive. I own the property of the old Simplot property. Thornton's the elephant in the room, and there's a saying, eat an elephant, eat one bite at a time. And I think that this project overall is great, but I think it should be separated into two projects. I think you have two issues there. You've got to cross the railroad, and you've got to cross the freeway. If you do have the west side in connecting down to the existing roundabout, you already have the roads essentially graded out. You have the property owned. The project is a third of the cost. It relieves the issues in the near term, and then you can have your long-term project going across and connecting on the other side. So I think that solves the problem quicker and less expensive, and should be a two-pronged project instead of a single.
And that's what I was kind of talking about, is getting through the preliminary engineering, environmental review, and we then be able to set the facing and staging and seeing how much different cost that would be and how it could be actually constructed so it's easy to move it as a joint project as opposed to two separate projects in there. They need to be able to be connected through the design process as well in that. So from that perspective, if we could bite off that first chunk and get the preliminary engineering and see how it's best phased, we'll go a long ways to help the city move that project forward to grant funding as well.
One of the major problems we ran into when we did Portal is that there was all the history behind that was the interchange and dealing with the state. And, you know, essentially it came down to the state said, you know, see us in 15 years and it's going to cost $40 million. And we don't have any money to help you. So I don't want to see a project that's not realistic. I don't want to see something that's never going to happen. And this scares me again, because I know that if you cross the railroad and you come down the west side, that land is owned, the roundabout has already contemplated it, it was built right through my property, the right-of-way went all the way up, and the only issue is getting across the railroad. And then you've relieved all the pressure off of Thornton, and it's not this big, huge project that can't happen. And that's my reason.
And one other thing, just to add on to that, you know, there's kind of a couple points. One is kind of going back to the land use map, why that connection getting over so important, and that's kind of looking at those tall bars that are on either side. The growth that's occurring in the northwest part of the city, in the Portal Way corridor. So that was one of the justifications for, you know, why we thought it was important to go all the way across. The other reason was improvements at the roundabout. By not getting all the way across it, by 2034 anyway, if we hadn't gone all the way across, we might have to add more capacity to that roundabout, which is not an impossible task by any means, but it's just something to consider. And then also the underpass under I-5 can start to stress a little bit of capacity issues. So But I'm in agreement with, you know, having both. Like, if it doesn't have to be one or the other, it certainly can be a solution that has both and it can be phased.
And you also need to understand the history that, you know, these overpasses have been talked about, interchange been talked about for 20 years, 30 years. And so this is a 20-year program, so it's great that it's there, but it also needs to be something that happens quicker.
We have one last person signed up, and there could be more after, but we're going to release the high school students after this last speaker, who is Janice Shook.
I had a question to follow up with the transpo on what they just said for clarification. They're saying that if we don't extend Thornton all the way across and make a roundabout, we end up with a bottleneck at the freeway. Well, what difference is it if the traffic goes down the west side of the freeway or if they go over to the other side? You still have the same number of cars going into that portal interchange to get to the freeway.
Well, yeah, northbound traffic wouldn't go underneath the portalway crossing. It'd go up to the Thornton and go across. Southbound traffic wouldn't have to go across Thornton Way, come down portal and go underneath the freeway. It would be able to come down the west side out here. So basically, you provided two additional lanes across I-5. With extending all the way across, as opposed to trying to make sure that everything can happen the one portal way under crossing out here. So it's really the, say, the PM peak hour, if we don't have it go all the way across, all the traffic in portal way corridors, as well as the traffic coming off of I-5 northbound that wants to get to the west side, all has to funnel on that one lane westbound on portal way underneath the freeway. We have the portal way extension across, then they have a choice to either going across the portal way or going across the Thornton. So we've provided more capacity for that connectivity across the freeway.
Janice Shook.
Hi, I'm Janice Shook, 1411 West Next. I've been attending these meetings for 20 years in Thornton Road. All of them, and I long believed in it, and I'll give you a few more reasons. Opening it up to have people just move where they want to move will make me willing to come in and shop on Main Street Ferndale. I currently will go into Bakerview because I'll just go down Northwest and shop rather than come in Main Street. I have 7 stoplights. And most strips into town, I have to stop at all 7 stoplights. And I'm particularly irate at the Walgreens light that will stop 10 or 15 cars on Main Street for one car who pulled up to the light and then made a right-hand turn and left the scene while we all stopped and waited for nothing. That's just fun. So, having Thornton Road have people avoid Main Street will allow people to go shop Main Street. And Thornton Road will also allow that commercial development that you zoned Portal Way for through all those annexations over the last 20 years. And it is a lot of commercial property waiting for development. And you would be opening it up for all the people. The population of Ferndale is up on the hill, and they could go down the hill to shop. A little off, but it's a zoning issue. I never understood why Thornton and Church did not have the mini mart put there. If we are about communities, if we are about children being able to walk to the corner and buy milk and bread because mom forgot to get it on her way home, I've never understood that. Every time I go through that intersection, which is a long ways from home, I think that every time I cross it, why is there a house on each corner? To me, that's a concurrency. I'm not sure what our current reading is. If it's a 6-year plan, I sure hope not. I think that no current resident, and I'd love to hear your philosophy. It sounds like a mature philosophy of people who live somewhere shouldn't have to suffer for the new people who move in. And your pay raise was justified in that. I'm sorry, you make more, your raise is more than I make from the school district. The concurrency issue, it should be within a very short time frame of effect, as you know, a year or two, because their customer base grows, but they start having reached a fulfilled, you know, good-sized customer base after 2 years. And as you prove, retail sales tax goes into business, so impact fees must be collected for that increased traffic. And that, if those people came from Canada or the county to make those purchases, we don't even get their sales tax anymore, thanks to the state legislature. As we understand it, the sales tax goes to home of purchaser, so you have to collect that impact fee. Main Street accident, freeway. We have a truck stop there. The first time that project was proposed, about 15, 16 years ago, the impact review on it said no, that a truck stop could not go there because of the steepness of that overpass. It was not appropriate for trucks. But then again, we had a different city mayor, you know, at that time, and the project went through for the person who developed it. But we have a problem with southbound trucks exiting the freeway onto Main Street. And their tires of their trailer drive over the car sitting to make a left-hand turn onto I-5 southbound. I know this is a state-funded project anytime you do it with interchanges, but I wish you would scream about how unsafe it is, because the next time I have to throw the car in reverse, or I have to wait for the next two cars behind me to throw their cars in reverse to get out of the way of the truck, I'm getting out the passenger door and just leaving it there. I carry a camera for this purpose. This problem, I don't, everyone lives on the east, on west side. Right? I'm, you know, living on the east side, gives me some different problems. Oh, downtown should have paid the same impact fees, but they need bike paths, they need pedestrian paths, they need transportation modality, they just need different ones. And they especially need a parks impact fee, because, and I work in schools, and I have had reason to visit apartment complexes with my students. And I was shocked and amazed to see two-year-olds using parking lots as playgrounds.
Using what?
Parking lots in apartment complexes as playgrounds. Okay? When you talk about city center density, those are the problems that just hit me every time that word comes up, is the children. Density does not serve families. We have an obesity problem. You know, those other transportation modalities, pedestrian, bicycle, need to be facilitated. That's like 40 years ago. That was in the Netherlands for a summer. And the bicycle trails are paralleling bike lanes, with their own individual stoplights at intersections. They have their own thoroughfare in the bicycle trail, which I understand what you mean. And people really use them. Okay, thank you.
Yuri, so 5 minute break, and then students, you can come up here, council will sign your sheets, we'll get you home, and we'll do it homework. So just 5 minute break. Thank you.
stop the suppression.
Yeah.
Thank you.
traffic complaints in Ferndale with the level of service? Absolutely not. I don't drive Main Street from 4:30 to 5:30 because I'm not an idiot. But I'm just saying, that's just my own personal choice. And if I have a level of service that gives for 1 hour during the day, that's a fantastic thing. Great, if you want to make my life better, just come into work, just go 9 to 6. Let the public works guys come in 7 and leave 11 to 3:30. You guys start by setting, you know, just get some of the peak traffic time off. You'll make everybody's life better. There's other things you can do, too. And you could do something. I'm not a huge proponent of impact. Yeah, let's just say. That's fair, isn't it? You could do some counterflow stuff on Main Street. We'll go 3 lanes, 2 lanes out in the morning, 2 lanes in, the traffic, pedestrian traffic on the outside, because now there's 2 lanes under the train tracks there. Mark Walker was right. The west connection coming in that roundabout is perfect. If you had an expectation that roundabout wouldn't serve in the future, it could be potentially widened. Probably should have been 2 lanes to start with. It wouldn't have had any extra cost in the scope of the project, probably 1 or 2 years. Probably near my 3 minutes, but there's a ton of stuff. I would just caution you on projections are great, anticipated fees are great. You're in a climate where you guys are a little insulated. You're not necessarily, let's use Greg an example. not a business owner, maybe not even a resident of Ferndale. Not necessarily one that increases the effect personally. On your level, at the city, slight wage increase. A lot of us are working for substantially less than a day. We've seen net worth maybe cut in half in property values. You want affordable housing, and you would like impact, because I understand that. But if this disparity in value and cost keeps going opposite, you will see. I know exactly we've got impact fees off development last year to the dollar. And I would tell you it'll go down before it goes up, especially if you raise fees. You just got to be realistic. It's great to plan. This is a great presentation, but I guess I would disagree with I missed the start, so I maybe blew it. But when it says there's no easy solutions, that doing nothing is an option. Doing nothing is an option. It absolutely is an option for developers. And if nothing happens with developed business, when they want growth, you get taxes from business, they want. It is all tied together. They absolutely shouldn't pay, well, in my humble opinion, businesses should never pay parks impact fees. They're the service already, and they're already revenue generated for the city. So there's no reason, you know, they're not a resident that would pay something. That's it. And then I said the warrant, and I fixed the Ferndale Terrace.
Yes, sir. We're running heavy trucks on.
It's done. We're done.
Yeah, we're done now.
Well, it's Wednesday night entertainment night. I'm Dave Smith. I head up a company by the name of Shaped International Development Company. And we first purchased the property at the foot of Thornton Road at the freeway there, or at the railway. And back then we invested about $250,000. Built a plant, bought some 15 acres of property. And at that time, prior to purchasing the property, most of you probably know the story, that I wouldn't say we were promised, but it was said that we were going to have a connection at over a crossing over the railroad, and that we would have access to the freeway in relatively short time. Well, this is 36 years ago.
Checks in the mail.
And you know,
that's relatively short.
I'm getting a little worried right now. I don't think I'm going to see this in my life. So, I'm pretty perplexed when I see this Thornton Road overpass. You people are talking about $32 million, and you're going to put it over there? I know I'm not going to cover it, and I'm going to live long enough. It's not about me living long enough. I might be dead in 5 minutes here. But, you know, I have to introduce John Lopes here. He's my son-in-law. And obviously married my daughter. They have two little boys, a year and a half and four. And I'm telling you, these guys are full of fire. But by God, I don't want to see them coming up. So, please, Mark Walker hit the nail right on the head. You know, let's not get carried away here. You know, let's do one thing at a time and do it well. Don't try to bite off more than you can have. Because, you know, I said, we spent $250,000 35 years ago. How much will it cost us to buy that land? Probably not much more for the land because it isn't worth too much. We didn't have any access. But to build that plant, it's not $250,000. It's 20 times that or more. So, you know, you take impact fees, and you think you're going to put this stuff away. You put away $1,000 impact fee, we just say, and you keep it for 30 years. If you keep it in the bank today, it's still going to be worth not much more. And your cost of your project isn't going to be $30 million or $32, it'll be $60 million. You know, so we got to find some way to get the job done, and let's get it done soon. We've been, you know, I commend this council. I'm not here to bash you. Work with Greg Young and I have you. Fine people, and I know you have good intentions. And, you know, we want to work together. We want to spend some more money here. We're begging to spend some more money. But we've got to have some access. We've got to have some people going by there. Samson, I brought Samson here from, they brought their head office and over here, and I told them, you're going to have access. They thought it was going to be great. I told them a big lie. I wasn't intending to. But, you know, it's just, we've got more land there. We want to build some more buildings, bring some more business. But we can't do it if we're going to have to run cars and people up through the residential areas. It just doesn't make sense. I can't attract businesses, service-oriented businesses that would probably locate there and serve the surrounding county. I had one interested a few years ago, but when they knew they were going to have to send their servicemen for an extra 20-minute drive or 10-minute drive even, you know, they just get in their car and go. So, you know, I just, needless to say, I didn't really got to look at that. That's about all I wanted to say. All I say is thank you very much. And not back here begging again to get things done.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I see that our transportation consultants were writing furiously while you were talking, so they're definitely getting it now. Would we have someone back there? And then do we have other hands? Sir, so you're next. Anyone else afterwards? So it looks like we have two more for right now.
Then is Tom Edwards, I live on Crescent Street in Ferndale. And tonight we've been talking about future plans here for the area, which I think is great, well thought out, and obviously discussed. Myself, I'm really concerned about the maintenance of some of our current road systems here in town. I noticed in the future we've got, if I recall, I think you said it was like an $8 million short on shortage on maintenance funds
potentially.
When I drive around town, I think we have deferred maintenance a long time where some of our roads now they don't really qualify as roads. They're really a series of connected patches that are failing. And I'm not an engineer, but I think it's going to cost a lot more to really rehab a lot of these roads now than it would have if we had done some permitted maintenance. But maybe this subject is not appropriate for this gathering. If we've got an 8% short on our objective, it's going to be worse. So thank you.
We're going to turn it over to Janice Marlega, our Public Works Director, but it's an entirely appropriate question.
Thank you. Yeah, and thank you for your time. And yeah, as part of our plan, we're trying to, we'd like to restore the pavement we have in sidewalk fund. That's why they're sort of included that in $20 shortfall. What we'll have to do is look for new funding sources. So the new committed funding sources so that we can make sure those programs stick around and that we are able to get caught up on some of the maintenance that we haven't been able to complete. So I mean, it's going to take us a while, but we've got to get the plan in place and we need to start doing that maintenance and get caught up. And so yeah, very good comment. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I'm Paul Eaglesford, 2501. Mountain View Road. I'd like to just draw attention to a couple dots that weren't connected in discussing the Church Road Extension project. It was called a low priority project. And then under project cost estimate slide, it says eliminate low priority projects as a way of closing the gap. I'd like to suggest that the Church Road Extension, being was called a low-priority project, should be eliminated from the plan. And I certainly have a vested interest. I'm one of the homeowners who lives in the urban growth area there that would be impacted by that, that the right-of-way would go through some of our property. And by having this hanging over the heads of quite a few property owners there outside of the city, it makes it very hard for us to put our property on the market if we want to sell, if we want to move. We've owned our property for 11 years now, and it's something that's come in. It's always been sort of one of these low priority things that's been on city plans, but we're not in the city, and it does affect us. And you know, it's kind of a nice thing. The planners, I've seen a few plan directors come and go, and they always like to keep it on their list because they like to have their options. So if there is development, if it's annexed, it gives them some talking points, some wedges. But what they don't realize in the meantime, I think it creates an undue burden on people who really have no vote. We can't vote for the city council who's making these decisions. We're basically getting a burden that we have no control over because we're not in the city. And it just doesn't seem fair that planners like, and several planners, when they've tried to explain it, they like these straight lines. Drivers don't necessarily need straight lines. I haven't heard a lot of clamor of people saying they have trouble making a right-hand turn where Benson's is, where Douglas makes that weird intersection. Maybe that intersection could get improved a little bit, but, you know, is it really that necessary, and is it really going to affect the traffic use and congestion for people to have to make a turn at the corner, as they do now, of Church Road and Mountain View? Maybe a flashing light could be put in there. Maybe that intersection could be improved. Maybe, you know, I don't know if it needs a roundabout, a light. I'm not an engineer, but, you know, there are existing roads, so there's a little dog leg, but planners like straight lines, I was told. I think this was Mr. Black, who was the head of planning several people ago. And that's how he explained it. He showed me the map, and, you know, we like these arterials to be straight lines. Well, that's fine for planners, but I don't really know that people in Ferndale are really going to have a better quality of life, or, you know, that it's really going to improve anyone's life to have things be a straight line. Why not, as this one of the slides said, is the priority is to improve existing roadways. And there's already a shortfall in your best guess estimates, of which are probably underfunded. You already are showing a shortfall for capital improvement. And there seems to be pretty widespread consensus over the last 20 years that something needs to be done in Thornton. And some people have spoken, well, gee, maybe to get it done, we should simplify it and just go over the tracks and find the funding. Well, if you consolidate and say, okay, let's have one priority, maybe get it done, wouldn't it make sense to take a low priority project that is going to have some really difficult consequences for a lot of people who have no vote and have said we've passed around petitions? There's been a fairly loud clamor, and this has been discussed before, that people impacted most who live where this Church Road extension would go don't want it. They don't want to be part of the city. I don't think people want to pay money for something that's not going to really improve things. As Sue said, all it's going to do is take people down to Douglas where people can already get there. It doesn't really solve anything. And if the idea is to get people to Slater Road, that doesn't do it, and there's no plan for that. So I'd like to speak strongly to following your own guidelines and eliminate low-priority projects. And I'd also like to just highlight what the person before said, to put higher priority on safety issues, on improving crosswalks, sidewalks. I don't care what part of the budget it has to come from. You know, people are talking about silos. Forget about silos. Figure out ways of doing it. That's what government's supposed to do. And put the priorities on making things safe for children. I think it's abysmal in Ferndale that we have all these kids who are walking around, getting off the school bus. They don't have sidewalks. I don't know what the statistics are, but do we need to wait till some kids get killed or seriously injured? You know, I think it's the responsibility to put our priorities there and to stop talking about building roads where we don't need them. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else that had comments?
Can I just make a couple comments?
Sure.
This gentleman just made some very good points there, and I want to talk just about, as a developer, you know, we want to pay our fair share. And you talked about sidewalks and safety for kids that, you know, in a good place and a good community. And we as developers, it really doesn't come right out of our pocket. But we're the facilitator. We bring the businesses. We
build the buildings, we and whether we sell them or whatever we do, we want to play a part in the community. And someone earlier mentioned about the school that's up Thornton. And, you know, it's going to put all this traffic by, and it's going to be, you know, dangerous for kids. Well, it doesn't have to be. If there's proper sidewalks, fencing along schools so that the balls don't go running out on the street, you know, those simple things, you can have a lot of traffic going by a street or by a school. And without any negative impacts. And, you know, I think back, if we would have had that crossing or the overpass built 20 years ago, we would have had a number of buildings built on there, and businesses generate tax dollars. And, you know, it attracts, if you have a good, vibrant city, that's the most important thing about it. But business can play a big role in giving you that good neighborhood. It employs people. Samson, when we leased it to Samson originally, it employed about 50 people. It's around 150 people now. They have their head office. They have an R&D department. It's just talking to them daily. And they're finding, we talked briefly about an expansion. Now, I don't know whether it's going to come and when it's going to come, but it might be sooner than any of us think. And, you know, they're a good employer. Great company. And they employ, like I said, 150 people. And if they expand, there'll be a few more. It might be only 5 or 10 or 20, who knows. And these people, all shop, you know, they're going to do some shopping downtown. You know, the gentleman that's got the mini mart started, or at least still here. You know, if we get some of the traffic off of the main street that's going through, just wants to go through, it's going to allow someone to go down to that town, downtown, and shop there. And maybe you need that little mini mart up and the lady would like to have a mini mart up at church and sort. You know? It probably makes a lot of sense. So I just wanted to throw that out to you.
Got anybody else that wants to talk or anyone else wants to speak? Council, we need a vote to extend the public hearing. Obviously, this is a great meeting. This is what American politics is all about. We're here from a lot of great people. I know you all wrote some notes and listened, but we still want to continue this public hearing farther on. So I'd entertain a motion to extend the public hearing to the next meeting.
So moved. Second.
Okay, so moved by Councilperson Feria, seconded by Ingram. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries 7-0. So great. Thank you to the public. Thank all of you. Some great comments. We'll continue this on. Obviously, this is a conversation that's been a lot of years, but from the council and the administration, thank all of you for coming. Really, really welcome.
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye. We are adjourned.